Well, thank you very much. You should always visit the coasttocoastam.com website. Tonight you will see all kinds of strange stuff. A mischievous jack-o'-lantern featured there. I mentioned last night the real-life tractor beam is being developed, and a screaming tree. And in the news, could we deflect an incoming asteroid by bombarding it with paintballs? What? Could there be a real Manchurian candidate? Don't get me started. Live shark falls from sky at California golf course, and U.S. expands secretive drone base for African Shadow War. That would be the outfit known as AFRICOM. You know, there's sub-Saharan Africa, and then there's, well, the Saharan part. Guess where the Middle East is? I recommend everybody get a map. You know, we're a lot closer together than we really think we are. You look at that map and go, oh, they're right over there. We'll carry on here in just a minute or so with Jack Rourke. He has some extraordinary parapsychological stories to relate to us, and I have a couple of pretty good questions, I think, for him. We'll be right back with Jack Rourke on Coast to Coast AM. Chubby Wells in with you tonight for our usual Saturday night soiree. Say, we're becoming regular nightlife impresarios here. So you're at this house. The woman's husband has split, and you're in there, and you see two women and a man with a beard having a big time on the staircase, and they see you seeing them, and they flee the scene.
No, they didn't flee the scene, actually. They were on the floor in front of the fireplace. The man stood up, you know, in a sort of defensive posture, and the women sort of covered themselves. And as I stood there I squinting, and like I was holding my breath and maintaining my focus as long as I could, and then slowly the perception just faded. You know, and I literally sat there and said, I can't believe what I just saw. So we can
now, seriously, what do you think something like that really is? I mean, that's just strange.
It's really, really strange. I'll be able to tie this back into our conversation about obsession and possession. And what I felt like it was at the time was I didn't know what I was seeing. This is really strange. You know, that maybe right. This is some kind of, you know, place memory or bleed through from, you know, from the previous owners, the previous activities on the estate, you know. But what was interesting was they reacted to me as if they saw me. So that was phenomenal. And in looking back at it, what I wonder is if there was some kind of geomagnetic anomaly or something that altered the fabric of space-time, you know? And because really, if we think about it, you know, time is something that's created by the brain. We don't live in a linear universe. We live in an infinite now. And we can then begin to talk about multiverse theory and all these other types of things that you know, how mathematically it's been proven that every variable of every solid object and every human being exists simultaneously in another dimension. And so when you try to wrap your brain around that, it's staggering. But let's just stick to the idea of time, and that time is really ultimately irrelevant. And so perhaps there was something unique about that location that enabled some kind of rift in space-time where that I imagine that I probably looked very much like a ghost to these people that I perceived as ghost-like.
Yeah, so the guy with the beard's going, what the bleep is that?
Exactly. You know, I must have looked really strange. I was dressed strange. I was in his house. You know, there was, who knows what he saw.
Yeah, what's this spaceman doing in here?
Exactly. And so we continued on with the investigation, and, you know, about 45 minutes later, I'm up in the above the pool in the where the dining room was in that house, and we were just off the dining room in a little living room there. And this lady, you know, anyone who's has European friends, you know, they're very gregarious and gracious and, you know, very hospitable. And so she was, you know, she had made some tea, and we were sitting down. It was about 3:30 in the morning, and my colleague and I and an assistant and this woman and her friend, we were sitting around, and she was finally relating her experiences directly to me. And as I sat and I talked with her, she then, all of a sudden, she was describing this long... I went to the property thinking she was having some kind of haunting or haunted-like experience. And that's when I first learned that she was having these terrible sexual nightmares. And that at first, the nightmares began as sort of erotic and playful, and then over time they became worse and worse and worse. And when I pushed her, and I said, well, tell me more about them, she said, well, there was a man, and he was a thin man, he had sort of hollow cheeks, and he had a beard. And I looked at my colleague because I had described to him what I saw, and he gave me this look like, don't even go there, because he liked to keep things very kind of superficial, and as you can tell, I go very deep with these things. And I looked at her, and I said, please continue. And she said, well, this man appeared to me in my dreams, and he was very romantic, and we began to make love. But over the course of weeks and months, he became aggressive, and then he introduced a woman, and then a second woman. So in her dreams, she began to, what started as sort of innocent, playful fantasies, or maybe, you know, some kind of dreams and lovemaking that would kind of squelch any desires that she may have had built up from her husband leaving, suddenly became these aggressive and unpleasant, but yet sexual experiences that she was ultimately feeling like she was losing all control. Every time she closed her eyes, she felt assaulted by these beings, to the point where she developed insomnia. She wasn't sleeping. Her health was declining. And even during the day, she was having to take cat naps just to get by. So she was going for days on end without a proper night's sleep. But every time she would close her eyes, even in the middle of the day, these assaults would continue. And so it kind of, I thought about the whole idea of obsession and how these things started very pleasant and how perhaps they were meeting some need of hers because her husband had left. And like, I want to reiterate for your audience that this was a beautiful woman. She was healthy. She was vivacious. She had no shortage of companionship. Yet she was having these really, really amazing experiences. And again and again and again, I have found again and again that with people who report, a large percentage of people who report haunted or haunted-like experiences to me, there's some kind of component that is sexual in nature. And it's very intriguing.
It certainly is. Now, let me ask you something.
Yes.
If someone were to ask you, I'll ask you. Mm-hmm. I'll just go ahead and confess it. I seem to be the George Plimpton type of a lot of these experiences. It could be just that's what finally landed me here. But have you ever had a run into one of these deals where it's like someone is making like a growl that comes out of them right when they're on the edge of just right at the line between unconscious sleep and the one where you're mostly asleep but still somewhat aware?
Yeah.
And a growl comes out of them that's not coming out of their throat. It's not even coming out of their diaphragm. It's coming out of them, so to speak, just like the very core. Just kind of a, just ridiculously low. And little tiny, not even little tiny, I'd say more like 2 to 3 inch long, little almost like little razor slices, as you were saying, not very deep, just enough to, you know, make a little something on there, a little scab on there once they heal, but very fine. You know, what do you make of something like that?
Well, you know, typically, you know, as for the sound, I'd have to think about that one, because what I would be inclined to say was that at the tipping point where you kind of give over to sleep, that perhaps there is some kind of utter, like complete relaxation, and that there is some kind of air evacuating itself from the body or creating some sound wave or some kind of some tension that's being released that's making some kind of vibration that we interpret as sound.
Okay, gotcha.
But the other thing is, I'm sorry, in kind of thinking about what that sound was, I kind of lost the other second part of your question. The other thing.
Well, you remember when what's her name, Sigourney Weaver opened the oven door in Ghostbusters, and that thing said Zool?
Yes.
Deeper than that. Just ridiculous. And then the other thing I asked was, if you've got that combined with like little slice marks appearing here and there, I mean, in some cases, really precision slice marks, like right vertically on your forehead, right between your eyes, you know, 3 to 4 inches long in some cases.
You know,
I mean, unless they've got long fingernails, they're clawing themselves. I mean, anything can happen when you're sleeping. It's like you'd have to know the people and see them. But if they weren't injuring themselves, what would this portend?
Well, remember we're talking about my book deals with the nature of perception. And so, but I will answer your question to the best I can. Like I mentioned in my book, The Rational Psychic, A Skeptic's Guide to Extraordinary Perception, I tell the story of a young girl who I alluded to earlier in our conversation, where she was manifesting these unique wounds that actually looked like anarchy symbols.
Oh, man.
And I was present when these wounds manifest. She was 15. She had beautiful, smooth skin, you know, sort of, pardon the phrase, but, you know, virgin skin, you know. And as I watched, you know, it would appear what appeared looked like sort of a redness, and then a welt would appear, and then the welt would raise, and then it would split, and it would bleed slightly.
While you're watching.
While I watched this occur.
Unbelievable.
And so, now, there was some very stressful circumstances under this. And now, when typically hysteria is blamed for these types of wounds, and hysteria in these cases are defined as, you know, the extreme pressure, the emotional pressure that builds up, that manifests in some kind of, you know, physical way, whether it be illness. People are often familiar with the term hysterical blindness, you know. So these types of experiences, these heightened emotional experiences, the pressure-filled emotional experiences can manifest in wounds. And what's interesting when you talk about placement, and particularly with these anarchy symbols, is they seem to be at times mitigated by our subconscious. You know, like, for instance, when you have these, you know, really religious people, they manifest the stigmata on their palms, in their side, the wounds of Christ, because they're so identified with the passion of Christ. You know, with this young girl, you know, she was, you know, your typical kind of punky skateboardy, a little bit kind of teenager, and she manifested these anarchy symbols. So it's really interesting. Now, you know, we can jump to mythology and metaphors, and especially religious ones are really good, because religious and spiritual metaphors, you know, prior to science, are how we defined and explained unexplainable things.
Sure.
But now I want to backtrack a little bit and talk about the voice thing again, because, yeah, I'm just reminded as I was sitting here that I have in my cupboard a cassette tape that Barry Taft gave me. And that was it's a recording from an investigation that he conducted in 1974. And I tell you, John, it will send chills down your spine. I had him play it because he doesn't think these things are a big deal. But I said, John, I said, Barry, you have to play this for an audience. And he gave a lecture about 3 or 4 years ago, and he brought the cassette and he played it for the audience. And these are all, you know, weekend warrior paranormal enthusiasts and people who are really, really into this stuff. And you could have heard a pin drop, because what was on that tape was an inhuman voice, an inhuman sound. Has anyone ever, I'm sure many people in your audience have seen that film that was, I forget what it was right off the top of my head, but it was that film that was set supposedly in Alaska where the UFO was coming. And the man began speaking in a foreign tongue, and it was this mechanical sounding voice. Well, this is the kind of voice that I have on this cassette in my cupboard that Barry showed me, and actually gave to me. And he said he was at a home of two women, and they were reporting a variety of poltergeist type activity. And he happened to be there, and he was recording this woman as she slept, and she began to vocalize in this way, except she wasn't moving. There was a sound was coming, it was emanating from her.
Oh,
and
man.
And it sounds like it's phrased like, you know, like someone's talking, but it has this deep, guttural, mechanical sound to it. Now, he at that time was doing some work with, he had a colleague that was that worked at the FBI, and he took this recording and he gave it to this agent, and they ran it through this sophisticated software, voice analyzing software at the FBI. And he said, Barry, someone's playing a trick on you. This is nonsense. He said, look at the spectrum of the way the sound waves are. This is completely outside of, you know, the range of the human voice. He goes, this is nonsense. This is someone's pulling your leg. He said, no one's pulling my leg. I recorded this. I held the tape recorder to this woman's mouth. So, I mean, there are phenomenal things that happen to this world that just remain unexplained. And what I've done in the book is in The Rational Psychic, is just to try to give people a tool to understand or explain the nature of what they're perceiving, typically, or most importantly, most significantly, the nature of extrasensory extraordinary perception, so that people can really, really, really get in touch with who they are, and not get sidetracked, not get fooled, not get swayed by metaphor and mythology. Because I'll tell you what, John, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, with, you know, why people become seduced, you know, or why, how we get pulled away from our authentic self, is the reality is that some people who get involved in the paranormal and get involved in psychic development in particular, once they begin having certain experiences and sensations, it can become a bit of an exercise in escapism. And when the truth of the matter is if once we go deep within ourselves, we have to have the courage to embrace all of who and what we are. Because only when you do that, only when you can go within and face exactly what you are, can you and deal with those things, can you ultimately touch a much bigger, much more beautiful, and dare I say, divine aspect of who you really are.
What do you make of psychokinesis, Jack?
Psychokinesis is amazing, and I was just having this conversation the other night with someone, and what really isn't something else that's important to understand is that if you try to develop psychokinesis, you are messing with your nervous system.
I'm telling you, that's absolutely right. Please keep rolling.
Yes, you are messing with your nervous system. You can disrupt your sleep-wake cycle, your circadian rhythms, which will significantly deteriorate your health. This is no joke. Now, what's interesting is about random spontaneous psychokinesis, particularly what you find in hauntings and things like that, is that these types of happenings, by and large, again, occur because of the interconnection, the energetic connection between human consciousness and the environment. Typically, what we see is that the phenomena that occurs is mitigated by the subconscious of someone. Usually it's, you know, a younger person, a teenage years, someone going through the throes of, you know, puberty, but it can happen in adults as well. And you know, what most people don't realize is that people who are experienced PK are more often than not suffering from some kind of seizure condition. Now, they might not necessarily, you know, be manifesting grand mal seizures, but what happens is, you know, you will ask questions like, you know, are you taking any medication for sleep, et cetera, et cetera, and we'll find that, oh, yes, I've been prescribed X, Y, and Z. Now, I'm very fortunate that my colleague is a neurophysiologist, Dr. Barry Taft, and, you know, I can hand over prescriptions to him and say, tell me what this is, and he'll boom, just tell me, you know, what's what, and he'll talk about, you know, the neurological implications, what the medicines are for, and, you know, everything from top to bottom. And what most people don't realize is that their sleep medication are actually anticonvulsants. That's one of the applications.
Interesting. Yeah. Extremely interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, when we come back, I wanted to ask you a question about, it's one of those multi-level questions, so maybe we'll just save it.
I love it. I'm ready.
Okay. His book is entitled The Rational Psychic, A Skeptic's Guide to Extraordinary Perception. And let me see. I got it. His website is Jack Rourke. That's JACKROURKE.net. Visit it. And we'll be back with him for another half hour or so on Coast to Coast AM. You know what I'd like to know? I'd like to know if psychokinesis is real and if temporal disturbances are possible Could we make ourselves appear in apparition form to others within what I would like to call the CTR or current temporal realm? I'll try that one out on Jack Rourke when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. John B. in with you for the ride through the night. JackRourke.net, JackRourke.net is his website. The Rational Psychic, A Skeptic's Guide to Extraordinary Perception. And Jack's our guest tonight. Say, what about that? Do you think a combination of some sort of a psychokinetic ability and, I don't know, some kind of woo-woo that I don't understand might make it possible for a person to make themselves appear to someone, either as an apparition, certainly in a dream that could happen and does, but what about making yourself into a ghostly presentation?
It is absolutely real, John. Absolutely.
Oh, man, I wasn't expecting that. I thought you were going to say no way.
No. It has nothing to do with psychokinesis. It's called bilocation. And you actually also brought up a really, really interesting thing about time and the nature of, time. And so I want to hit that too. But with terms of bilocation, I experienced this personally. I'll tell it from two different ways. First off, several years ago, I was involved in a really passionate relationship. And anyone, I'm sure you have your story too, John, of that one person in your life who you couldn't get enough of, but you were like oil and water, right? And there's so much passion. Well, in my particular instance, this friend of mine, she lived about 50 miles away from me, and I would spend, a lot of time at her place, and then she would come here and spend time with me. And one particular evening, I was sleeping in my own bed for once, and in my dream, I've had outer body experiences and sort of astral projected all through my life. And this particular evening, I was sleeping, and I woke up. I became conscious and aware, standing in her living room, 50 miles away, while I'm sleeping in Los Angeles.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I had this, and I looked. And I recognized, oh, this is one of those dreams. Got it. So I thought, I was so drawn to her. She was such a sexy woman. And I thought, I'm just going to go peek on her, And so I began to walk down the hallway toward her bedroom. And all of a sudden, I got to the doorway and I realized, oh, wait, she had once had a roommate and the roommate had moved out. So she switched bedrooms. So I went back to the, as I thought of that, next thing you know, I'm standing at the foot of her bed, and there's my beautiful girl, and she's curled up in her bed sleeping, right? And I'm watching her, and I can see the moon kind of coming through, the open window, and kind of she had this beautiful skin, and she was just gorgeous. And I could smell her. I could smell what her bedroom smelled like. And as I'm standing there admiring her, I'm staring at her, spectrally staring at her.
Yes.
All of a sudden, she sat bolt upright and screamed.
Oh no!
And
said, "Bob, get the hell out of here!"
Yeah, it frightened me so bad. I woke up. Well, I'm not kidding. The next morning, she calls me and she said, "Don't ever do that again."
Oh no! You're kidding me.
Yeah, she said, I had a dream where you were standing at the foot of my bed. Don't do that again. Now, this same woman, we had Yeah, this is great, right?
Yes.
We had such a passionate connection that another, months had gone by, and I would spend probably, 4 or 5 out of 7 nights at her place. I loved her. And this particular night, we had a kind of a falling out, and I went home, and I just, I hardly ever used my landline. So the ringer was off, and my cell phone was needed to be charged. So I just turned it off and charged it. And I thought, that's it. I'm good. I don't need to hear from her tonight. Well, don't you know that was the exact night out of all nights that she woke up in the middle of the night with an emergency and she had to go to the hospital. And so I was asleep, and as I was sleeping, I talk about this in the Rational Psychic. It's very important when you're talking about extrasensory perception to understand the nature of space-time and how our consciousness are interconnected and how emotion draws us to those people and those objects that, that make it capable of us perceiving information in an alternative way. Now, because I adored her, her well-being was relevant to my well-being. And this is really important. That's called need relevance. And so as I was sleeping, I became fitful and uncomfortable, and I started replaying in my mind, you know, the dramas with her. And I could hear her, and so I could see her, and I knew she was upset with me, but I couldn't figure out why, and I could see her pleading. And then all of a sudden, I heard her voice as loud and as clear as if I was talking to her face-to-face, and I heard, "Jack!" And I woke up, and I thought, and I went to the window, because I thought she was standing outside my house. And I look out the window, there's nothing. I go down to the front door, nothing. I go to my phone, I turn it on, and there were 17 missed calls and text messages from her, each one getting progressively worse because she was trying to get a hold of me. She was so upset, she had to be rushed to the emergency room. Now, how did I know that? You know, I really believe she reached out to me through our emotional connection. It's just an amazing how anyone who's ever been in love knows that they know when their loved one is not feeling well. If you're at a party, you can see across the room you need to rescue them or it's time to leave. We have this ability to connect with one another in a really subtle yet beautiful way.
So is psychic ability the same as intuition? Because people use words all the time that really sort of they convey their meaning through osmosis rather than actually selecting the exact word needed to convey the thought.
Yeah, we kind of use, in modern times, we sort of use these words interchangeably. But in the rational psychic, I really, really split hairs. So psychic students and people who are curious about this phenomenon can really get clear. You know, the literal definition of intuition is like direct knowing, right? So in essence, if we really want to be picky, you know, intuition and psychic ability and psychic perception really are similar in that they both are a form of direct knowledge, direct knowing, right? But I split it even further because being intuitive and being psychic are two very different things. Being psychic is the ability to perceive impersonal information, and intuition is personal guidance. And, you know, I don't know about you, John, but have you ever had a friend who maybe you go to him or her with a concern and they start telling you what you should do based on their intuition? And, you know, you're a whole different human being with a different set of needs, so there's a different context that needs to be recognized, and their intuition doesn't feel good to you. It feels like you're not being heard because they're trying to tell you what you should do based on what feels good to them.
Yeah, you just instantly feel that unique feeling of no.
Exactly. And what happens is people who don't understand intuition oftentimes, when they engage in practice as a psychic and they start taking on clients, they begin to counsel people based on their intuition, their personal guidance, thinking, oh, this is what works for me, that works for you. But what they're doing is they're really violating a boundary. You know, our job as a psychic is to be completely objective and access information remotely, impersonal information to us for our client, about our client, so we can empower them. Intuition is actually, on a personal level, is the combined experiences of our entire life that speaks to us via our feelings. And this is why we've been able to successfully evolve and why we can feel and we can move intuitively in fight or flight situations, because we can sense without needing to consciously think about things. We can just go with our intuition, go with what feels right, and inevitably that always leads us in the right direction for us, but it might not necessarily be right for someone else. So psychic perception is perceiving information that's impersonal, and intuition is personal. But I want to get back to what you were alluding about time, because that's really amazing. In The Rational Psychic, I tell a story about I was doing a TV show once where I was scheduled to do sort of a John Edwards type gallery reading in front of a live studio audience. And, you know, I prefer to work one-on-one. I can do that kind of work, but I really feel good as more of in a therapist setting. Once upon a time, I actually had an office in a therapist suite that I shared with an MFT, and I was the only person who worked there that wasn't a psychologist or psychiatrist, and I would wear a suit every day, and no one knew what I did. It was really kind of fun.
Yeah.
But this particular, I was scheduled to do the show, and we were taping on a Monday night, and it was a Friday morning, and I was running on a treadmill, and I slipped into my psychic mode, and I began to see myself on the stage, 3 days from now, and I was being given the name of the person I needed to connect to, and all these specific details about, her mother who had passed, and a child that, she had lost, et cetera, all these details. Now, 3 days later, I take the stage, and I do a brief introduction of how I work, and kind of develop a rapport with the audience, etc. Now, then I felt the urge to move, and anyone who's watched psychics on TV work in front of an audience, you see how all of a sudden your awareness gets drawn to a certain area. I moved to that area because I had already seen 3 days before I needed to go stage left, the fourth row, like two seats in. I go right there and I say, I need to speak to so-and-so. Well, cricket, no one knew what I was talking about, right?
Right.
I repeat this several times. I start sharing some additional information. No one knows what I'm talking about. And I start thinking, God, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I made a mistake. Maybe my intuition was wrong. Well, as soon as I kind of begin to admit that, and I'm feeling a bit crestfallen, this woman raises her hand and says, oh, I'm Janet. Do you mean me? I'm a teacher. I'm this. I'm that. And I said, I was just looking right at you, what are you talking about? But the amazing thing is how was I able to perceive information 3 days in the future about somebody else's past? Think about that. That's kind of a temporal knot. There's some part of us that is aligned with an aspect of reality that is outside the bounds of space and time. And this is why in The Rational Psychic, I talk about, there's something else that I like to stress with my students, and I do it in the book as well, is that all people are extrasensory, but not everyone is necessarily psychic. And the reason that we're extrasensory is because within all of us, we have in our brain something called the amygdala. And the amygdala actually scans the environment outside the bounds of space and time, looking for pain and pleasure. This is what makes all human beings extrasensory. Now, I know that sounds crazy, that all people are actually scanning the environment outside the limits of space and time. But Dean Radin did some really Dr. Dean Radin did some, I want to call him doctor because I honor his PhD, did some really interesting study on presentience. And what he did was he actually took subjects and he measured their skin conductance, their stress response in their skin. Now, this is a completely subconscious process, unconscious rather. You cannot make yourself sweat. You can't control the amount of moisture that manifests on your skin. And so what he did, he measured this because this would show that the unconscious was being activated. And then he put them in a controlled booth and in front of a monitor where they would view stressful images, images of gore or violence, or really heightened, passionate images, sexual images, erotic things, violent things that would cause a stress response. And then he had, benign pictures, a field, a flower, these types of things that would incite no stress response. And what he found was that when the picture would come up and that it was stressful, the body would react seconds before the image was actually displayed on the screen. And this experiment was replicated at many other universities. And the odds against chance of this go into the hundreds of thousands and millions. That what they really, really showed is that there is an aspect of our brain that predicts, that senses the threat or the arousal before we're even conscious of it. Not only before we're conscious of it, before it even manifests in our experience. Wrap your mind around that.
Well, okay, that was interesting, wasn't it, Jack? You still with me?
Oh, what happened?
I'll tell you what, I have experienced some of the strangest electronic and technological phenomena ever. Like last night and tonight, more than all of the rest of the year combined, which is like a lot.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what, let's pick up. We're running out of time, man. So I'll tell you what, tell us about the state of the world and just in general. And what you see as evolution in the young psychics that are coming up through the ranks behind you?
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, that's pretty. You know, Max Planck said something interesting, and I think it relates to parapsychology and psychics in general. It says a new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up familiar with it. And you know, we're really seeing that kind of transition right now. Where, you know, what I do for a living has become more and more mainstream, you know, psychics, tarot readers, you know, numerologists and all these, you know, alternative healing, homeopathy, you know, we're embracing a new normal. And so what I really find it rewarding working with young psychics because I feel like it's very important for them because we live in a culture now where a lot of folks create these virtual identities online and they live through an avatar, that they begin to understand that this work isn't about adopting any kind of psychic persona or metaphysical identity, that it really requires really owning emotionally who you are, and that there's real work that can go into developing these abilities. But in my book, you know, I provide a lot of great information and tools that is available nowhere else. And so I love working with young people because you can see them, their quest and their desire for answers is so immediate, and they're so hungry. It's just wonderful.
Now, do you do seminars or private clients? I mean, how do you do it?
How do you do
the training?
I do private clients. I do some lecturing here in Los Angeles. I will be traveling around the country. The dates aren't set yet, but they'll be through my publisher, Sounds True, and you can learn more about me at soundstrue.com. You can also find the book at soundstrue.com or Amazon, or you can go to jackrourke.net, and I'll have my lecture dates and things posted there.
But, and your book, how do we get your book?
The Rational Psychic is available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. And you can get autographed copies directly from me via my website at jackrourke.net. But the book has been number one in ESP and parapsychology. It debuted at number one on Amazon. It's on the bestseller list there now. And we're really, really excited. And really, folks have been emailing from all over the world, Bahrain, Pakistan, India, the UK, Australia. People are loving this book. And I cannot stress enough, if you are interested in psychic phenomena or you are a psychic, you need to read this book. If you're a paranormal investigator, you will be a better paranormal investigator after reading this book.
Jack, you have been a lot of fun, and I hope you'll come back on the program again very soon, all right, as things heat up around the world, don't you know?
I would love to, and John, it was great to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Nice to meet you, sir. All right, Jack Rourke, jackrourke.net. And on the other side of the break here, we'll come back with David Rubin. Interesting guy. Incubus and succubus. This is Coast to Coast AM.